Thank you and good morning. It's a privilege to be here with all of my public health colleagues. We're going to talk about a food safety focus this morning, and in particular the focus on moving forward or leveraging the existing traditional public health systems many of you know about for early foodborne detection and mounting outbreak response. So the focus is really going to be around leveraging the non-traditional community information, meaning Twitter data, social media data, and follows neatly some of the focus you just heard from Candace. I first wanted to start by acknowledging this is a very complex area. This is a myriad of public and private information sources from industry through regulation and then public health action when events fail in the early part of the food production or the early inspection cycles. So you end up having disease outbreaks. So on the far left is really the representation of the public health function, which is to have systems in place for detecting disease outbreaks as quickly as possible through clinical and laboratory and public health reporting channels, and then use that to trace back to the point of food consumption, the point of food packaging, and you do this in collaboration with the various regulatory agencies as well as with industry. And the part below indicates there's a huge amount of data that's involved in doing that. There's a huge amount of what we call traditional data, and there's even more non-traditional data. We're going to be focusing on just a snapshot of a project where we're piloting to look at some of non-traditional data and see what it would take for that to add value. And then as you go further back up that chain, as you start looking at some of the additional data that would be important for understanding where that breakdown in the process occurred, it would be equally important to consider how we could use early information from the community or from social media to help with that detection process. Part of this is driven by the fact that a couple of years ago, the FSMA law was passed. It was for food safety modernization across the workspace, across the industry, and through all the regulatory and public health functions. A fair amount of money has been earmarked for that. We all know the woes of current budgeting issues, so a lot of this money hadn't materialized. But nonetheless, there's an emphasis on the scale and scope of this problem and the intent to invest in these kind of systems and solutions. So you see in the center part there, there's a clear function, clear focus on the public health role in the state and local and territorial areas. Northrop Grumman currently has been involved in supporting food safety, part of its integrated surveillance, a part of its broad public health functions and capacity at CDC with other agencies and with states. So we're currently supporting in this particular area of practice the FoodNet system, and it's used in some sentinel states to detect particular outbreaks as a part of the emerging infections program. So that's one of the reasons we're leveraging that capability and presence and the work that's currently going on with our capabilities to improve CDC's and the state's abilities to detect and respond to outbreaks. Also NORS, we're supporting the NORS, which is the National Outbreak Response System. Now, National Outbreak Response System includes all forms of outbreak reports, not just foodborne or waterborne. It includes flu, for example. So we're supporting all of those systems for a part of the integrated surveillance approach. So we're thinking in terms of current surveillance, current support of public health function, and then how do you complement that with emerging data, whether it's coming from clinical environments, laboratory environments, or from community information. So always looking forward how we build that next information into the paradigm for decision support and what are the tools necessary to make that effective. So this is the hypothesis we started with when we started looking at the use of the non-traditional data. Could we, in fact, take the traditional public health information and amplify it with some of the information coming from Twitter that would then help prioritize and target precious public health resources to the more likely clusters, more likely outbreaks, rather than, you know, sort of having five and picking the wrong three? So that's the hypothesis we're trying to test. Secondly, could we really get ahead of some of this pre-diagnostic data and capture some information from the community that will help inform what we should be doing to prepare for the break while we're currently today waiting for the culture-based response that will come through PulseNet and through laboratory confirmation cycles. So how do you get that information, store it, use it, persist it, and analyze it, and then accommodate the incoming clinical and lab information when it's ready for action? Could these sources help to characterize which ones are better suited to a response? So today we're working with Tennessee, and I'm going to go through some information from Tennessee about the the focus on how that works in practice. Now, I'm an old public health guy. I know public health happens at the street level. So it's working in the communities where the data originates. That's where the first decisions are made. That's where the people are going to be taking the action to respond to whatever that scope of response is. So we're saying, which ones do you work on first? Where does public health really need to engage? And as information evolves, how do we help that precious capacity from public health evolve to be the most effective and targeted and timely for that response? Obviously, the ultimate outcome is if we can reduce the exposure, you know, by 3 days to a salmonella outbreak, we're saving lives. So there's a big issue. There's a big payback. There's a big cost savings. But particularly, there's a big benefit to health outcomes if we can accomplish that. And finally, this same approach is relevant to any form of outbreak in a community. So we have a great deal of interest in how does this also aid other outbreaks. And we just, ironically, I didn't know that Candace had this in her slide. She was talking about the indications of questions about pertussis, questions about other communicable diseases that are coming out of social media. That's the kind of question. Could we use that? In what way? How do we ensure there's value added from harnessing that capability? So we have to admit that this potentially is a null hypothesis. It is a proof of it could work, but only work in certain areas. That we may be proving it's really not relevant in certain areas of practice. Either way, that's good science. That's good knowledge to add to the public health paradigm. So we're looking collaboratively with Tennessee, and we're looking at what kind of information would be necessary to make something a complement to that public health function as it operates there for their foodborne response. So this is the centerpiece of that activity. And in the middle, in the blue arrow going from left to right, we're talking about the traditional public health information and how they receive their public health complaints, and it varies from different states. How they receive that, whether it's telephone, whether it's an online system. Utah's got a web-enabled reporting system. There's all sorts of ways that initial information comes in. And some areas it works better than others as far as receiving emergency diagnosis or poison center data that may feed and complement that. So we're acknowledging that capability, and we've helped support some of that and grow that over time with the various tools. And we're trying to add to that. So if you see up at the top, evaluating the context of clusters, we're trying to bring in some of the social media data you see in the bubbles at the bottom, starting with tweets, to determine whether or not we could characterize at a point in time tweet information that would be relevant to a potential foodborne outbreak, and then use that to amplify which ones of those complaints, which ones of those clusters are most ready and relevant for public health action before it ever gets to human hands. So all this is done in a machine environment, machine learning, so we could enable that epidemiologist sitting in Nashville, Tennessee, to know better which ones I should work on and be informed by all this sort of best available information. And as it moves forward then to use automated systems for automated interviews, feedback, all built in, again, the framework of each state. We all know each state's unique. So it has to be practical. It's got to work in that environment. The tools have to be modulated to plug into that. That's what we're doing with Tennessee to start with. So we started with some of the social data from Twitter, and you've heard more about social media already, so I'm going to skip those two slides. We went and bought 26 weeks of data to look at for this study. And in doing that, the tweeples, the people who tweet, I've learned. right? Did I get that right? So this clustering you see here is the density of people who are tweeting over that 26-week period, the total. So it's a sense of, you know, where the tweet's coming from, and as you know, it's going to be more concentrated in metropolitan areas. So you're also going to have more density as far as disease in metropolitan areas. So those two things are complementary as far as information. So as we got into looking at that data, what we did is out of that 54 million tweets that we pulled for that 26-week period, we went in and did an array of queries for filtering that data. And we used two factors like vomit and diarrhea, and you know, there's all sorts of other code words. It's like a litany of words that we used that said, okay, if, for example, you have both vomiting and diarrhea that would be in the same tweet, then that would eliminate things that somebody may tweet about, like, you know, that concert last night made me vomit. You know, so that really is not what we're looking for. So you got to find ways to filter out that noise, because there's a lot of noise and tweet. So use those two-factor analyses, and then it distributed this way when we did a Q-sum analysis to say, you see at week 14, this is annualized weeks. At week 14, there's a peak in the number of tweets that are going on. So that says maybe this is early analysis. This is sort of the first brush that we did with Tennessee. It indicates that around week 12 to 14, something's going on. A lot of people are tweeting with those words that represent potential food or waterborne, some sort of disease process. At the same time, if you see 24 to 26, it's low. The total number of tweets is very low. Why is that very low? Because that's usually the lowest cycle for any tweeting by anybody anywhere. It's around the 4th of July week, and everybody's gone. Somebody's tweeting. So that seems to be, you know, the explanation for this, early information. So we started looking at specific words, and I'll draw your attention. You see on the far right, there's a peak in all of these individual words around August. So, again, you're saying, does that mean there's something there? We overlaid that with Tennessee's outbreak data. We took their cases and outbreaks as they had them and tried to correlate that. And we're early in that process, again, for analysis. But we're doing it with and for the leadership in Texas, the other state, Tennessee, to develop this approach to say, does this work for you? What's this proof of concept? How will it add value to being informed about an earlier outbreak? So they're excited about it. We're excited about it. We're working with, I don't know if you're familiar, the CDC supports centers of excellence. So Tennessee is one of the centers of excellence for food safety. So we're working with that Tennessee and the State Department of Health and that academic center, that's the center of excellence, to look at these capabilities and where our tools fit. So we use, you know, some of our Northrop Grumman tools to test this process, and we're offering a set of tools that may support this. Obviously, the next step would be how do we sustain this in practice once there's a demonstrated value, and how do we use that to supplement what Tennessee is currently doing, and then how does that extend in multiple states, because the capability and the function we're talking about here, most of this is common to multiple states. Each one of these states have unique features that have to be tailored as far as the data sources and the kind of questions they've got. But there's a lot of common function here. So we're looking for efficiency and economy that could offer this tool and those solutions. So here's the outcome we're looking for. You see on the left the various types of data. And I use GOLD data as the traditional public health reporting data that comes from the ERs and that comes from the labs and, you know, all the places that we all depend on every day. Bronze data, come to understand, is data such as what we're talking about here, that unpredictable, unreliable today data. Hasn't been proven to be relevant, but might be relevant. So we're lifting that into place. Next data is data that's coming from all sorts of sources we don't know about. Unstructured data is just blooming at every community level. So we have to anticipate that and build that into our paradigm. And we do that in a lot of environments already and other non-health areas. So now we're extending that more and more to health as well. And then finally, genomics and bioinformatics. Many of you know we're moving toward the point where we have the assays that will be occurring at the community level. So you don't have to wait for a culture that's going to be currently delays foodborne outbreak response by up to 3 weeks. So if that's the case, compressing that by a few days, or even better, by a couple of weeks, would really save a lot of lives, prevent a lot of disease, and save a lot of money, and really contribute to health outcome. The analytics become more complex as you go over the right-hand side. Every tool, every piece of data, every outcome adds to it. As you look at integrated analysis, something that we're talking about here, across comorbidities, looking for methods that we could find patterns and share those tools by looking for common features, we're increasing the efficiency for public health. But analytics becomes very complex and ultimately at the bottom. For this to target those public health actions, use the assets best way possible, prevent the disease. That's what we're all about.